Coming up on episode 239 of Wheel Bearings, we've got a bunch of travel this week. So this one is a bunch of segments that we've previously recorded but not yet released to the main feed, including discussion of the Volvo C40, some Hyundai and Ford executives, and more coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 239 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abuel Samage from Guidehouse Insights. And Roberto and Nicole are both traveling this weekend, and we just could not get aligned to record a whole new show. But I do have a whole bunch of content that you haven't heard before that has been recorded over the last, some of it over the last week and some of it over the last month. And it's all coming up right now. We're going to start off with Nicole and I. We were talking about the Volvo C40. We were both out in Palm Springs, California this week to drive the new C40 as well as the new updated 2022 version of the XC60 T8 Recharge plug-in hybrid, which now has almost double the electric driving range it had before. It's now up to 35 miles. But this discussion is just about the C40. So let's start off with that. All right, Nicole, we're here at Palm Springs.
Mm-hmm.
Hummingbirds around, flitting around us here
it
in the garden.
Smells like flowers.
Yeah. We just drove the Volvo C40.
Yes.
Volvo's first, not purpose-built, but first electric-only model.
Yes.
That they're adding to the lineup. What'd you think?
Overall, I liked it. I would give it a thumbs up. I thought it has that very Volvo interior where it's luxury, but it's not that flashy, in-your-face kind
of
thing.
It's not ostentatious.
It is not ostentatious. It's like, yeah, I'm a luxury car, but I don't need to shout about it. So it got that feel. I mean, it feels like a Volvo in good ways.
Yeah.
I enjoy driving it. I think the one-pedal driving in this is fantastic.
I think they did do a great job on that. I think for the listeners, for those that not familiar with the C40, it's basically an XC40 with a different roofline.
Mm-hmm, pretty much. They squished the back.
Sort of coupe style roofline.
Yep.
You know, kind of as you mashed up an XC40 and a BMW X6.
Okay, that feels accurate. Yeah.
But it's got the same powertrain that's in the XC40 Recharge, which mm-hmm. is also a battery electric,
yep.
and the Polestar 2.
Yes.
So 402 horsepower, 400 and some foot-pounds of torque. I can't remember
the exact number. You're the number guy, Sam. I'm not going to know that number off the top of my head. I know one number. I know the range. 226
yeah.
miles of range EPA
yeah,
rated.
That is the one thing that is maybe a little, it's going to be a little bit disappointing to some people, you know.
I think people, you know, you want that, you want to see that 300, you want to see a crazy amount of range, but truly the reality of it is that you don't need that kind of range for 99% of what you drive. Yeah, mm-hmm. if you're going on a road trip, you need it. How many road trips do you take in a year? You know, it's not...
Me personally, not that many anymore.
See? So it's not like your everyday, most people aren't going to drive more than 226 miles.
We're not talking Mazda MX-30 kind of
right.
range.
Right. See, that's a range where I like had a panic attack on the drive program because I missed an exit and I thought, oh my gosh, how many miles do I have before I'm going to run out of miles now? Ah! Like I sort of panicked, but you don't with this. I mean, we drove all day long and still came back, you know, with tons of miles still left in the car. And we roamed all over the place in Palm Springs. And they had us look at houses and stuff. So we really did roam around in Palm
mm-hmm.
Springs.
And the morning part of the drive was driving up into the mountains.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and then, of course, you know, we recovered some of that energy coming back down.
Yes. I liked it. Positive. I like it. I don't know, weird, different things. There's one trim. So that's it. Get your one trim.
$59,000 roughly.
$59,000 for that one trim. I don't even know that there's really any options you can add to it.
No, there's not.
I think, like, other than, you know, you can put, like, mud flaps on it and that kind of weird
stuff.
Yeah,
I think there might be some dealer-installed accessories.
Yeah, but there's nothing, like, they have all this big options list. And inside you have, and I think I got this right, the seats are, like, the insert on the seat is black, no matter which one you get, but there's the carpet color, like, changes.
Yeah.
You can get a, like, what do they call it? It's not black, charcoal?
Yeah.
Charcoal, or this really funky blue that matches the one blue exterior
yeah.
that looks really good.
That's a good color.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that blue, the blue trim on the inside, you know, kind of breaks it up, because it is a little dark in there.
Yeah, it is.
But,
and the blue brightens things. I mean, because they had, we all drove the blue ones. We were all little clones of each other
yeah.
today. But they had at the lunch stop, they had a silver one that had the fully black interior.
Mm-hmm.
And when you open that one up, it's like, yeah, it feels a little dark in here. It
yeah.
feels a little dark. So getting the blue does definitely make it feel a little bit more open and a little bit brighter. I think I would get the blue.
Yeah. So, you know, if you've driven the XC40 before, and we both have,
yeah.
you know, this is very familiar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it is, for all intents and purposes, an XC40 with a fastback roofline on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but that roofline, there is one minor drawback to that. Actually, you know, even though it's, you know, they've sloped back the roofline, you don't really give up any headroom in the back seat, because that one trim option you mentioned is, you know, includes a standard all-glass roof.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think the designer said that gives you back about 35 millimeters, so about an inch and a half
okay.
of headroom, because
you
don't
feel
have
like
the headliner.
Was roomy in the back? I didn't feel
yeah.
like it was tight, but I didn't feel like it was roomy.
Yeah, I mean, it was more than adequate. You know, I'm 5'11", I set the seat. The driver's seat.
And you took a seat back there, and it was fine.
And I sat back
okay.
there. I had plenty of leg room,
there's
plenty of headroom, so no problem at all.
All right.
You know, and it was fine for me. I mean, you know, if you're 6'4", 6'5",
then you're in trouble.
You're probably going to have a little bit of a squeeze back there.
So
but
if you're a basketball player, this might
yeah.
not be the best car for you.
Or Roberto Baldwin.
Or Roberto. Roberto's never going to be able to yeah. get into this car. He's just going to
yeah.
have to fold like a pretzel to sit in the
Well,
back.
I mean, he has driven it. I mean, he'll be fine in the front.
He drove it in Sweden.
Yeah.
What was it, back in?
October, I think.
October, yeah.
You know, there is one drawback though from that design, which is rear visibility, or the
yeah.
almost complete absence of it.
100%. When you look through it, and when you look at that back window, it doesn't look that compromised from the outside. But once you're sitting in the car, that little glance you do into the rearview mirror isn't a glance. You're kind of like almost sort of bending
yeah.
down a little
yeah,
bit and trying
little,
to
little
see.
Little mail slot to look
yeah,
through.
Yeah, because you feel like you have to stare at it for a second because you have such a narrow field of vision. You think, did I actually see? Have I seen as high and as low as I want? It's not good. It's,
yeah.
That's a major drawback.
Yeah, so you've got a very, very shallow vertical space,
mm-hmm.
and then it's also compressed on the sides by the
yeah.
rear seat headrests.
Yeah.
So, you know, the one thing I told, you know, Volvo that they really need to add to this vehicle is a camera mirror system, so you can
yeah,
actually
so that
get
you
some
can
rear
just
visibility.
Sort of see through everything.
Yeah,
yeah, that would make it. That would actually fix the entire problem if you just had that. Because right now it's too narrow. I keep thinking about, you know, like in the wintertime when you're driving or when you're it's raining and you glance back. If there's at least a little bit of snow that collects on the back of that, suddenly it's like I don't have any rear view at all. Awesome.
Yeah. yeah. But other than that, I mean, it looks really good, and it actually looks better than I expected based on having seen the photos before.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen one in person up until today.
Yeah, I haven't seen one either until today. And it's funny, it doesn't really look, I mean, in pictures it looks fine. It looks fine.
Yeah.
It looks okay. It doesn't look bad, but you're like, okay, fine, you know.
But it's got a nice, chunky, wide stance to
yeah.
it. You know, it looks fairly athletic.
It's really a good looking car.
Yeah.
And really, though, the thing that makes this different, if you're looking, for me anyway, if you're looking at other sort of luxury EVs, you're looking at this kind of thing, is that interior. It's just
mm-hmm.
really good. And again, it's not that it's flat, like, 'cause there's no leather. That's one of the big things. There's absolutely no leather in the interior. It's just synthetic and, you know, man-made materials. They have a leather-like kind of thing.
They use a lot of recycled materials,
yep.
a lot of recycled PET.
So there's no
bottles.
Like, super expensive full-grain perforated Napa leather
yeah.
option.
Or open-pore woods.
Yeah, all that stuff. But yet, still, it feels, the materials feel good under your
mm-hmm.
hand, and they look good. And it creates this really rich, warm, inviting experience for passengers. I thought that, you know, not every EV does that. Some of them actually feel, even when they're not cheap, per se, they have, it's like, well, we're going to use plastic everywhere, and it's light, and it's, you know, and they're like, it feels cheap. This
yeah.
this felt like a luxury car, even with the absence of leather, which is sort of, and like real wood, which is sort of a hallmark
mm-hmm.
of luxury cars.
Yeah, and, you know, 400 horsepower and 450-some foot-pounds of torque.
It goes.
It's got... you know, plenty of acceleration. Yeah. You know, 0 to 60 is like a little over 4 seconds.
Yep.
So it's quick.
It's not, you don't feel any sense of it not being able to get out of its own way. It definitely moves. It's not like a super sporty vibe in terms of handling, and like it's not like driving the Mustang Mach-E. That's
right.
They're very different. The driving characteristics very different. Like you think, oh, are EVs really that different? Oh yeah, the Mustang Mach-E feels like a performance sporty EV. This feels more like
a Mustang.
It feels more like a Mustang, as it should. And this feels more like a nice, pleasant highway cruiser. You wouldn't mind taking a road trip in this. It's comfy. So very different vibe.
And you know, driving up into the mountains, up, you know, from Palm Springs up to Coachella Valley, Vista Point and beyond, you know, I mean, it's a tight, winding mountain road, you know, going uphill and then back downhill, you know, so it really shows off the handling capabilities of this thing. It feels really stable, you know, no body roll.
No, it handled well. It has not an overly huge amount, but it does have that road noise. You can feel a little bit of the tire, which isn't...
Well, it's got big wheels and tires
exactly.
on it.
Exactly.
So, you know, you're going to get some of that. That's going to be inherent. And because you don't have the powertrain noise,
I think you notice it more. Because I was listening to it. We had this one section where the pavement was kind of pebbly and rough a little bit. And that's where I really noticed it. And I thought, but if I was driving a car with a gas engine purring away under the hood, would I even notice this tire noise? Is it just because it's so darn quiet the rest of the time that you get that little bit of uneven pavement and suddenly, oh my gosh, it's loud, only because it's not competing with anything else now?
And this is the challenge that designers and engineers are going to have with EVs. And I mean, they've had this problem with hybrids as well for many years now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you don't have... You've taken away some of those other noises that we're used to hearing in a car.
Right.
All of a sudden, you know, these other things that you never noticed before start to pop up.
Suddenly they seem loud, even if they're not any louder than the car you drove 5 years
because
ago.
Because it's the only thing you're hearing.
It's all you hear, so it's like when there's something squeaking, you know, you're like, what is that squeak? What is that noise? Suddenly it's so loud because it's what your brain focuses on.
But to their credit, at least in my car, there was no squeaks or
there
rattles.
There were no squeaks, no. Everything, no.
Yeah, it
was
not
all
that
solid. The car was squeaking, just that, yeah. So, yeah. No, the car was very solid. It felt very well put together. It felt... You know, it's almost $60,000. It felt like an almost $60,000 car in every way. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Now, you mentioned the regenerative braking earlier.
Yes.
You know, one of the things that they've done in this one, you know, they have the one pedal mode, but it turning that on and off is in the touchscreen interface. So you've got to go into the settings, and it's only like, I think, one or two levels down.
Yeah.
And it's just one tap, you know, to turn it off. But when it's on, you know, it's... I thought it was really smooth, you know, very intuitive. You very quickly get used to, you know, what it takes to modulate the accelerator to get just the right amount of braking force. And, you know, the transition, you know, is very, very linear, very, you know, very predictable.
Yeah, I always say that learning how to drive, or just not even learning, just trying any vehicle with one pedal driving, it's a bit like getting behind the wheel of a car with a manual transmission that you've never driven before. There's that brief period of time where you're trying to figure out the pressure, the exact right spot on the clutch before it releases.
Yep.
So you have a couple times where you pop it too soon, or you pop it too late, you know, and once you get it, you got it. But it takes a few seconds, you're like, okay, that's where it is on this particular car. It's kind of like that with doing one pedal driving. Like, how hard do I need to... This one was really easy. It was very quick, and it's very well modulated, like you said, so that it doesn't take a long time. You feel like there's very few moments where you don't have it yet, and you're stopping a little harsher than you mean to.
And it'll bring the car, you know, to a full stop.
Yeah.
In fact, on the last leg here after lunch, when we were doing the little architecture tour
of
Palm Springs, you know, we had, you know, a bunch of stops, and it was around town.
Yeah.
You know, so there was a lot of stopping. I only touched the brake pedal once that whole time.
Yeah, you did. It was, and that's really like we're on little side roads where you're kind of pausing and taking a right and taking a left. So you're constantly would have been on and off the brake had you been driving like normal. But you really need to. It slowed down, and you know these are roads where we don't know what's coming. You know, it's not like you're used to how far you're going to have to go. We don't know where the end of the, you know, where we're stopping, where we're turning. It was still really easy to modulate that so that you didn't feel like you were having to give up and like, oh no, wait, I gotta hit the brake. We're gonna be in trouble here.
Yeah. The one thing, you know, talking to a couple of other people that was a concern that was raised, you know, is the ride quality. You know, around here, the roads are mostly pretty smooth.
Yeah.
You know, some that, you know, are a little more coarse, so you get some of the road noise, but no, you know, none of the kinds of potholes that we're used to in Michigan and New Hampshire.
Right.
And so I'll be curious to try this thing out, back home, you know, and see how it feels, because Volvos sometimes can be a little on the stiff side
in
terms of suspension.
Yeah.
So the ride, you know, they're not always the most plush riding cars.
Yeah.
But
so it'll be interesting to see. At some point, we should get our hands on it on our home turf. And then you can thrash it through some Michigan roads. I can take it on some New Hampshire's excuse for roads, and we can see how it does on really rougher, not happy California highways.
Yeah, the first boatloads of C40s are being unloaded now. They should be in Volvo dealers over the next few weeks.
But they're not technically like in dealers because you have to order it online.
Well,
so yeah, they're arriving.
They've been doing pre-orders for a while.
Yeah.
They will be arriving at dealers for delivery to customers that already pre-ordered them.
Yes, otherwise you have to go online and order it. That's going to be the mode, right?
Yep, that's the plan, is primarily online ordering. And you can also do the Care by Volvo program, the subscription program where you have a flat monthly fee that includes the lease price for the car, insurance, all service and maintenance.
All the stuff.
And every 12 months you can change it up for something else.
Yeah.
Change it to a different
car. It's a healing thing if you have the money, because, the pricing works out for you and you can afford it, kind of a neat way to get a new car every 12 months.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously, you know, you've got to do some comparison shopping with, your insurance rates to see how that all works out. But, it can be worth it. I mean, it's basically just a new variation on a lease.
Yeah,
it's still an option. Different option for people.
Yeah.
So we both liked it.
I would give a thumbs up.
All right. Yeah. Great. Well, since probably won't see you again for a couple more weeks.
Yeah.
You're going to be traveling.
I have lots of travel. I'm all over the place. Right. Mazda and Jeep and other stuff, all sorts of stuff.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Next up, I've got a conversation with Anders Gustafsson, the head of Volvo Cars for the Americas, talking about what's going on with Volvo and the future of the brand.
Anders Gustafsson, CEO of Volvo Cars North America. Volvo has made a lot of news over the last year in a variety of areas, particularly around electrification. The target for the company, I believe, is to go completely electric, fully battery or fully electric by 2030, right?
Yes.
And is that global, or does that include North America, or is that just for Europe initially and maybe a little longer time frame for some other regions?
No, it's global.
Okay, so one of the big challenges for every automaker with making the shift to electric, of course, is batteries, supply of batteries. Obviously, today there's nowhere near enough capacity, batteries, raw materials, to go fully electric, even if we wanted to stop building ICEs today. Volvo has announced a joint venture with Northvolt, got a plant going up near Gothenburg. Beyond that, do you anticipate Volvo adding battery production in other regions, like here in North America, where I think you're planning to build EVs in South Carolina?
Yeah, we start to build our XC90, a new XC90, in Charleston. It's really just around the corner. Hmm. So I would say with the scale of that operation, we probably need a solution in U.S., and probably higher, could use a better word for it, but I don't have the date and the time for it.
Okay.
And also it's based on the overall logistics on batteries. We have our plants in Europe, they are by far the biggest one, and then the Charleston plant will reach 150,000-160,000 units, and then it's easier to calculate to have your own structure of battery supply closer to the plant in Charleston.
Is that volume for Charleston for both Volvo and Polestar vehicles, or is that just for Volvo brand vehicles?
No, it's the combined. Then, of course, we can always build more plants. Mm-hmm. So we have a growth strategy in U.S. I'm responsible for Americas, so it's 19 countries, and we try to maintain our logistic structure based on the regions that I represent Americas. And if you look at our growth plan in U.S., we are supposed to grow as much as we have growth the last 5 years. That's the same for the upcoming 5 years. It's 100%. So deliver that volume is going to put pressure on logistics, and it's going to put pressure on the whole kind of a value chain of our suppliers. So probably if you and I, we have a meeting in 2 years, I can give you even more answers, but we are into this business to make money. Mm-hmm. And to make money in this business, you need to have battery suppliers close to your plants because they are heavy.
Mm-hmm.
It's complicated to transport the batteries. So we need to find a solution.
Yep.
And I can promise you, we have a solution.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is Northvolt going to be the exclusive partner for Volvo Cars going forward, or do you anticipate forming partnerships with other companies, or even bringing it entirely in-house? Is that something you anticipate, you know, Volvo might do on their own?
I would say we have a development project together with Northvolt. They're not just going to deliver our batteries for a part of our company. So the short answer on your questions is that of course we need other partners to supply us. And let's see who is going to be.
Okay. During the I think it was during the Tech Moment day last year, is when a lot of the discussion around the EV strategy was happening. There was some interesting things that were brought up. I think we talked about the cell to pack architecture, which can obviously help a lot with energy density in the pack, and also utilizing iron phosphate batteries as another solution for some of the entry models. What do you see as a potential time frame for introducing some of those technologies? Is that mid-decade, the later part of the decade?
It's two answers. I'm a finance person, so my first answer, as a kind of a to be responsible for this business, is that we need to have competitive solutions. And to be competitive, you need to have the newest technology based on best range, cost, weight, all of the things that is troublesome around electrification. So to be able to go to 100% electric 2030, we need to have the best solutions.
Mm.
And I would say that's probably the best answer. It goes fast, and it goes fast because it's a lot of money into this industry, and it's a lot of money into develop batteries.
Mm.
It's a lot of money into find the minerals. It's a lot of money into signing contracts that can deliver the volume that you have decided. And if you have decided the kind of a Volvo Cars view into the future, it's easier for us to sign the contracts because we have decided how many batteries we need.
Speaking of minerals, obviously in recent weeks we've seen some, and months we've seen some recent, some significant increases in the price, at least in the spot price of some of those key minerals, like nickel in particular, has doubled in the last few weeks, and lithium prices are up, I think, 5x over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Has Volvo Cars managed to lock in some long-term contracts for some of those materials, or are you working to help develop new supplies of those materials with working with partners for that?
I think if this interview was 16 days ago, I would probably give you one answer and another answer today. So, but it's not just minerals and other ingredients that we need where the price is going up. It's on food, it's on gas, it's everything.
Yeah.
So I think this will calm down a little bit. What we have learned after or middle of COVID, but at least of controllable COVID, is that consumers change their behavior very, very fast.
Uh-huh.
And I think that will help us. And we're going to see a lot of changes in the value chain of what we need in the future. So
yeah.
It's just to make sure you are fast and you have good engineers, you have a good purchase department, and it's easier for them based on that we have decided. For us, it's not if, it's decided.
Uh-huh.
So it's 100% speed into the direction that we have decided.
Okay. I want to come back to the topic of consumer behavior in a bit, but I've got a couple other questions first. One of the interesting changes over the last few years for legacy automakers like Volvo has been the shift in the attitude towards a lot of the electrification components. If you go back a decade, most automakers did not consider that batteries needed to be a core competency. Most did not really consider motor design and manufacturing to be a core competency that they needed to develop. And that has really shifted. Obviously, you talked about batteries. Things like motors, power electronics, are those areas that are being developed internally by Volvo Cars now?
We took a decision a couple of years ago, and now we have executed it, is that all ICE development for our cars in the Volvo family is sold or outsourced to another company. So our engineers, they are 100% focused on electrification. It's easier if they are 100% focused, and that is how we are kind of decided to solve the prioritizations that you have in a company. Mm-hmm. When you have two solutions and two, I would say, engineer skills, and they, this is not a fight between them, but we have decided the direction that we would like to go, and then we will buy the ICE and hybrid solutions from the group that we are included in, and I think that's
right.
Well, that's a good approach, I think.
Okay. What? So does that mean that components like motors you'll be building internally rather than sourcing those from suppliers?
Yeah, let's see where we're going to land. First of all, the company, the engineers that we have, I used the word, moved over to another company where we buy all our ICE components, and also they are the ones that is developing and buying the hybrid batteries for our hybrids. It's run by them, and they know what we need, and they of course take care of the other brands in our company.
Okay. One of the big changes across a number of Volvo models over the last couple of years has been the transition to the Android Automotive infotainment system. And I know Volvo worked very closely with Google to implement that. Volvo Cars was along with Polestar, were the first brands to bring that to market. Last year during that Tech Moment day, there was a lot of discussion about bringing software development in-house, doing more of that internally, having more of it done by Volvo engineers. Do you think that will be, think that will include partnerships like the one with Google and potentially with other partners, or do you see longer term some of that work that you let Google do, bringing that back internally as part of that effort to internalize software development within the company?
It's not a question in one question, so
yeah.
If I can answer that. First of all, we have decided to set up and develop our own software company in Stockholm. We announced that last week. It's going to be a big operation, at least from a Swedish point of view. It's 900 colleagues that's going to be based in Stockholm, so we can fight with other high-tech companies in Sweden. We have a lot of them, as you know. It's easier to find the spearheaded talents, and they will of course work with our development center that we have here in California. So to answer your question, we will of course develop things that is and solutions that is linked to our central computer approach. That is one of our strongest statements in our new cars. At the same time, it's very, very important to be a good customer to our partners. So, and I think maybe I should ask you to have a meeting with Google and ask them why they like Volvo, and why Nvidia like Volvo, and why Luminar likes Volvo. Mm-hmm. Our engineers, they're good to work with. They are good listeners. We try to do a good job, so the plug and play processes based on the technology that we have developed and their technology is easier, and they can work together in a smoother way. Mm-hmm. And I think then it's easier for our partners to find the best people in their companies, because people that like each other work better together. And I think that is one of Volvo Cars' success factors.
Okay. You mentioned earlier that all of the ICE development has been shifted to this new company within the larger group, Geely Group. Are the current SPA and CMA platforms that Volvo uses for its models, are they the last that will incorporate support for ICE?
Yeah.
Okay. So they'll I assume they'll continue to evolve over the next 5, 6, 7 years at least, or towards the end of the decade, but then everything new coming out forward will be exclusively battery electric?
Yes.
Okay. Great. All right. So back to the topic of last question to related to customer behavior. One of the shifts that we've seen over the past year, in part driven by the effects of supply shortages, has been, particularly here in North America, has been a shift towards factory ordering. You know, traditionally, American customers have tended to go to a dealer, buy out of their inventory, and drive off the same day. And a lot of companies are reporting getting a lot more factory orders now. And of course, you know, I think the premium brands, European premium brands like Volvo, has had probably a higher percentage of that over the years. And you know, I think through the Care by Volvo program, I think you probably had a fairly high percentage of that. Do you see that continuing to accelerate? And you know, do you see a shift for the way that your dealers in North America operate in the coming years? You know, is it going to be more primarily factory ordering as opposed to buying from inventory?
I think it's yes and no. If you ask me what I want and what is best for us, it's of course to plan our infrastructure. It's by far leaner and it's easier to plan the plants and easier to negotiate with our suppliers. So yes, if you ask me, that would be great. But I've been responsible for Europe, Middle East and Africa and Sweden before, where you have, you know, 100% custom order, at least 95. It's not always good either. So it's good to have a mix. And right now, I think we are on a 35 or 40% custom order. And that is by far the highest in the history of Volvo Cars in North America. But I also think that in the future, at least what we plan for, is that we're going to have cars in US. We would like to have them into our ports, keep them there, and then we promise our dealers that we will deliver cars to them extremely fast with local local hubs closer to all our dealers. We have 280 in US to make sure that we don't put a stock out there that gives the brand an unhealthy situation and how dealers behave around pricing and so on. But at the same time, I would like to use their entrepreneur skills. You know, we need them. We need each other. So let's see where this is going to land. We have decided we're going to do it together, but we will also learn from the last 2 years that it's sometimes it's better to have less cars than demand.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Anders.
Thank you.
Pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam.
I also spoke with Christina Vasandani, who is the senior product manager at Volvo, about the new Android automotive infotainment system that they are rolling out into all of their vehicles. They've already got it in several of them now, and it's going to be coming out across the board over the next few months.
All right, Christina, you are the let's start with your title, your role with the with Volvo.
I'm senior product manager for cross car line technologies and accessories.
Okay, so we're driving the new C40 Recharge today. First electric only, battery electric only model from Volvo, but obviously it shares a lot with the XC40 and also the Polestar 2. One of the big changes that Volvo has done over the last couple of years is being the first automaker to roll out Android Automotive and Google Automotive services and have that really deep integration with Google in your infotainment system. What was the rationale for Volvo to go in that direction, to go away from an in-house built, purpose-built system to working with an open source platform like that? Mm-hmm.
That's correct. We were the first to introduce Google built in as a broader company, Volvo Car Group. And this was when we looked at developing the next generation infotainment system into our cars. We really looked to who was best out there. And we do find that having a partnership, as we have with Google, really allows us to bring the best technology into our cars, and also in that partnership, we're able to enhance and build out our services over time. So with Android automotive in our cars, when the customer drives off the lot, that's no longer the time when the car is at its best. We're able to deliver new software to the cars over the air so that we continuously enhance the current functionality. We can even bring in new features over time to the car. So it's really providing that great platform and foundation together with Google. And then, of course, it's Google, so it's something very familiar to our customers with best-in-class voice control and also best-in-class navigation.
Yeah, the voice control in particular, I mean, that, you know, for every automaker, they have known the pain over the last almost 20 years now with voice recognition systems of complaints from customers about trying to use these systems because they were always very limited. You had to know,
memorize,
use the exact vocabulary that the systems were capable of understanding. And, you know, there were reasons for that. They didn't have much power. What, how does connectivity and leveraging Google really help now with this system?
I want to say the main benefit with Google Assistant in the car is that Google Assistant supports natural speech. So you simply activate Google by saying, hey, Google, okay, Google, or you can press the button on the steering wheel or microphone on the HMI, various ways, but you can just speak naturally. So you can say, hey, Google, sing me happy birthday, for example, and it really allows you much more flexibility. You don't have to memorize certain phrases or commands to control in-car functionality. It's very easy to use.
And, you know, if you happen to be an Android user, I guess, I know, you know, at home we've got some Google Assistant-enabled devices in the house. If you log into your Google account with those, once you've trained it to recognize your voice, it can distinguish different voices, right? And does it do that in the car as well? If you, for example, if you and your partner each use the car and you have your own profiles on there, will it recognize who's asking the question?
That's a good question. I would have to come back to the actual recognizing different voices. However, in the car, if you have multiple drivers in the household, we recommend that everybody creates their own profile in the car for the best experience. So, for example, I have my own profile with my preferences tied to my key, and then my husband has his own profile in the car, and that's a great way with his Google account connected. So those are some great ways to really create that more personalized experience.
Okay. And, you know, we've had Android Auto and Apple CarPlay in vehicles, including Volvo vehicles, for a number of years now. And those always relied on having your phone be connected to the vehicle, and the apps were actually running on the phone. Now that you have this system, apps are downloaded directly from the Google Play Store into the vehicle. Is that correct? And who manages what apps are available? Is that something done by Volvo, or is it Google, or is it a combination of the two? Is it a partnership?
It's actually the apps that are available in the Google Play Store, it's really managed by third parties. So the great benefit is it's not a small set of apps that, you know, Volvo has approved for automotive use. This is really an open market where third-party app developers can release and create apps for automotive use in Google Play Store. So this opens up a lot of opportunity in terms of the availability of the entertainment and music apps that are out there. And even ChargePoint, for example, has an app within the Google Play Store where our customers can conveniently connect their account and use it to pay for charging, for example.
And, of course, the Google services are actually also tied into vehicle controls, right? So it's not just telling it
where to navigate you or what to play, but you can also control other aspects of the vehicle. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So it really allows you to keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the steering wheel. Google Assistant can control the climate settings in the car, heated steering wheel, heated seats. You can make phone calls, texts.
And what about for charging, you know, for planning a road trip, for example, you know, if you know that you're going to go somewhere, drive somewhere beyond the range of the car, has Google or Volvo integrated that, you know, trip planning into Google Maps and the system, so you can know where to charge?
And I'm going to say that's one of the real benefits with having Google Maps native in the C40 Recharge and also the XC40 Recharge. It's great when you're planning on taking that longer road trip. You know that you may need to make a charging stop, so Google Maps can help you plan that out in a convenient way. So that you know that, you know, after X amount of miles, I'm going to stop here, I'm going to charge, maybe it's lunchtime, have time to have lunch and then continue your journey. But it's also a great way to even control and keep an eye on your state of charge as you're taking a shorter trip. If you need to make a stop, Google will help you find available charging stations.
One of the challenges for people buying EVs that aren't from a certain company called Tesla has been charging, you know, and finding and paying for charging and reliability of charging networks. I know some automakers are doing aggregation of multiple charging networks and incorporating that into their infotainment systems. What Volvo just today, in fact, as we're talking, announced a partnership with Starbucks to roll out some chargers at Starbucks locations. What other sorts of things is Volvo doing to try to make the charging experience more seamless, more friction-free for owners?
Yeah. First of all is the Care Offer, which provides our customers with 250 kilowatt hours of charging credits with Electrify America within their network. And after that is used up, our customers will have access to reduced special rates with Electrify America. We also have a partnership with ChargePoint. So together, those two partnerships provides our customers with a lot of opportunity in the public network of charging. But we also know that the majority of our customers will have some sort of charging solution at home, whether that is via just that regular outlet or via our Wallbox solution together with ChargePoint. That together will provide our customers with very, very good options, but we're continuously working to look for to expand.
Okay. One other topic related to Google. There are a lot of people out there who perhaps don't trust Google in terms of their data. And obviously, there's a lot of data going back and forth between the vehicle and Volvo's servers and Google's servers. How do you respond to people who say, maybe I don't want to use Google services, or I don't want to share my driving data with Google. What has Volvo done to address some of those concerns?
So using Google in the car is not necessarily any different from using Google on your phone. You can decide what you want to share. And part of the sign-in process with Google, you accept terms and conditions, and you can yourself sort of set what you want to share in the car. Google Maps and Google Assistant are also you can still use them without signing into Google. It's not going to be that same level of personalized experience, but they can still be used for navigating and so on.
Okay, so if you happen to be an iPhone user, and right now you don't have CarPlay support, but that's coming in a few months' time, I think.
Correct.
But so if you're an iPhone user, you prefer using you know, Apple services in general, you can still use the built-in Google Maps without sharing any of that data with Google, aside from just, you know, obviously they need to know where it is you want to go to give you a route, but they don't necessarily know it's not tied to you as an individual.
Correct.
Okay, great. All right, well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it, and it's been a real pleasure driving this car today, you know, and I like what what Volvo's been doing with the technology.
It's great to see what's coming. Thank you so much.
In the future.
Next up, at the Chicago Auto Show in February, I spoke with Steve Gehring, who is the Executive Director of Safety Regulations and Policy for Hyundai Motor America. This was following the announcement of a new expansion at their Hyundai America Technical Center here just outside of Ann Arbor, Michigan.
All right, talking with Steve Gehring from Hyundai. And yesterday, Hyundai announced a big expansion for the Hyundai America Technical Center in Ann Arbor, commonly known as Hatchie. Give me an overview of the new safety testing and investigation lab.
Yes. Yeah.
So what's that all about, and what are you doing there?
So, thanks a lot, Sam. It's great to be with you here today. And the Safety Test and Inspection Lab is really giving us a safety opportunity at Hyundai and leveraging our safety activity here in the United States. So as we were kind of increasing our safety office here in the United States, we saw an opportunity to really increase our functionality and our ability to actually investigate here specific safety items that arise in the United States, and give an ability to understand how vehicles are performing. So when we started to think about where to locate this, we have an engineering facility, as you well know, in Superior Township, Michigan. And we said, what better place to increase our safety engineering expertise than in southeastern Michigan, where we have access to North America's best safety engineers and automotive engineers. So we located it there. And we're going to have physical lab space, right, to be able to look at electronics issues, be able to have ability to tear down vehicles to understand how they're performing when issues and questions arise, particularly in the area of safety. And we are also increasing our footprint there to actually do physical drive experiences too, right, with a vehicle dynamics pad and be able to test vehicles. And we're seeing the emergence of a lot of crash avoidance systems here. That, you know, it's on the floor here today at the Chicago Auto Show. And we want to make sure that we have an ability to assess how they're performing, particularly when questions come up. You know, we work very closely with NHTSA on various items. And it's good to have first account information as we're dealing with them to be able to answer questions that come up. And if there's safety concerns with them, for us to take the right action, you know, in a timely manner. So this lab is going to increase our ability to really understand emerging safety issues and improve the safety of our vehicles. So it's something that Brian Latouf, who is our Chief Safety Officer, we've really worked together here to strategize how do we become even better in safety. And we see this as a really terrific tool to be able to do that. And again, we're going back to the southeastern Michigan part of the United States because really that is where our engineering expertise here is in North America to be able to do that really well. So, you know, we're really excited about this additional capacity and this opportunity.
Yeah, Hyundai Motor Group across the three brands, you know, has really been one of the companies that has been pushing to make a lot of advanced driver assistance and ADAS systems as standard equipment across their entire lineup. So it sounds like you're going to be doing more. And you've got some really impressive capabilities even on, you know, relatively entry level vehicles like the Elantra and the Accent. Are you going to be doing more of that engineering work on those systems out of Hatchie, or at least doing primary development or just tuning them to the needs of the American market?
We're going to be able to really give the company a lot of insight of how those systems are operating here. and you know, there'll be certainly tuning opportunities as well. You know, our main engineering facilities, our homeroom, if you will, is certainly you know, based in Korea, but that doesn't mean we don't have engineering capacity and ability to impact designs here in the United States. So there's going to be tuning and more engineering opportunities here moving forward to us, because as you're saying, we're getting more and more, you know, the great thing about so many of our products is, as you said, the standard safety features in them. So this will really give us an ability to further tune those and develop them to provide the right mixture of not only safety, but, you know, some convenience as well for consumers in their driving tasks.
So you mentioned one of the things there being a vehicle dynamics pad. Would that be something that would be utilized for example, doing avoidance testing, you know, evaluating the perception systems and capabilities of these systems, both of new products, but also reevaluating some of the products that are out in the field today?
Sure, sure. As we're getting new products here into the United States, and as we're producing new vehicles here in the United States, this and we have various testing organizations, whether it's be IHS, whether it be NHTSA, or whether it be Consumer Reports, and even for our own purposes, to really understand, okay, here's what we've produced here, it's coming out of our various plants. You know, is it performing the way we want it to see it? So it gives us a lot of ability to do that. And as you said, when there's questions of performance in the field, it gives us, you know, access 24/7 to be able to get a hold of vehicles and test them. So that's really going to be not only to impact future product that's coming out, and products that are in the field. Any questions or concerns that come up, we're going to be able to address them and really understand them and work with our partners around the globe from an engineering standpoint, particularly in Korea as well, to understand, you know, what does this mean for us? What does it mean for other markets potentially? So we can really make sure our safety systems are providing the best measure of safety possible.
So how big an investment is Hyundai making in the facility, and how many jobs are you going to be adding there?
That's great. So, you know, we started out, it was going to be a relatively smaller number, and as yesterday's announcement indicates, it's going to be a $50 million announcement, and that's just to start, which is really exciting for us. To get the facility built, up and going, and operational. So that's going to be an exciting opportunity for us, and it's going to impact as many as 150 jobs, you know, to start with, to be able to staff that facility with the right engineering expertise to make it operational. So it's a big investment for us at Hyundai, and I think it's a great opportunity for folks in Michigan and that are interested in automotive engineering here in the United States.
So are you going to be, is this going to require, will this fit within the existing footprint that Hatchie has, or are you going to have to acquire some more land to provide for this space?
Yeah, so when Hatchie was created, the creators of the Hatchie facility were very strategic with future growth in mind, so we're able to use our existing footprint and acreage that's there at the facility, so we're not in a position where we have to buy additional land. We're able to work with the community and grow our footprint on the existing land, so we have a lot of open acreage there that we're going to use working with the township to do that. So it's not an additional investment in property. We already have the property. We're going to be able to expand and integrate our new facility into the existing Hatchie facilities to work all together there at that one facility from an engineering standpoint.
And when is this going to start operations?
So we're going to break ground here, you know, in the coming months, I believe, and it's going to take us a while, but we believe by the end of 2023, which is just a little over a year from now, we're going to be operational and being able to use that. We hope it's going to be sooner, but that's the goal, is to be, you know, by the end of 2023, be operational, up and going, and providing value to the company and our customers.
Well, it's great to hear, because, you know, even with all the advances that have been made in ADAS and making it more ubiquitous across, you know, high-volume products, there are still a lot of challenges with it. You know, a lot of testing has been done by agencies like IHS, Euro NCAP in Europe, AAA, you know, and, you know, we've added things like automatic emergency braking to a lot of vehicles, and it helps, but you know, it's not as, I think, as effective as some people would like, especially in things like low light conditions. So those are the sorts of things that the new facility will help to provide capabilities to improve on that performance?
Yes, it will. So we know that, you know, the existing suite of crash avoidance features are provide a great impact. They're effective in the field. Can they be better? Certainly they can. We've seen whether safety systems, whether they be seatbelts, braking systems, as Sam, as you well understand, airbags get better and better over time. The same thing with crash avoidance systems. We're going to see these sensors get more integrated, be more capable, and provide even greater service to customers and to road users, whether they be pedestrians or cyclists on the road. So definitely we're at just the beginning here of making our sensors and crash avoidance systems even more capable, and this facility will help us do that as well.
All right. Any final thoughts about what Hyundai is doing that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I think I've been in the industry, Sam, as long as you have, and I've seen a lot of change in it. It's exciting to be at Hyundai. We're growing our market share. The company is really resonating, and its products is resonating with consumers with terrific designs, terrific value, and most importantly, you know, for me, is terrific suite of standard safety systems. So it's really exciting to see a company be able to design and build and execute, provide good quality vehicles, and it's great to be with Hyundai and seeing increasing market share. So great to be here and great to be with you here with you today.
All right. Well, Hyundai is doing some great stuff, you know, both for consumer vehicles as well as through the joint venture that you have with Aptiv or Motional, getting ready to launch robo-taxi services with that. So good luck, and thanks for taking the time to talk today.
Thanks, Sam. Great to be with you.
All right.
Also at the Chicago show, I had a chat with Jason Turnbull, who is the marketing manager for the Ford F-150 Lightning, which will be going into production in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, nice. So super, even closer than we are.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So, Jason, you're the marketing manager for the F-150 Lightning. So let's start off. I mean, first of all, you know, the reception to this thing has just been, I think it's surprised everybody. Certainly surprised me. What's the current status of the program? You stopped taking reservations in December, converting orders. How's that process working so far?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, demand is through the roof, and the key thing is that's a good problem to have. Mm-hmm. But the current process is December 6th, we actually stopped taking reservations. So we topped out about 200,000. Reservation. Right now is we are actually inviting the first reservation holders to convert to an order. So starting January 6th is we actually invited those first group of customers to actually place an order, and those customers will be the first to take deliveries in the coming months.
Okay. And so far, you know, how's the conversion rate looking? You know, when you invite a reservation holder to convert to an order, What's your conversion rate looking like at this point?
Yeah, we can't actually share specifics, but what we can tell you is, especially early on, people are really excited. So we're seeing a very, very high conversion rate right now. And it's more of the biggest issue is what to buy, you know, the Platinum, Lair, or XLT. But what we're seeing is everyone's pent up demand. So as soon as they get the invite, they're actually basically converting to order that hour. Mm-hmm.
What about in terms of the split of vehicles, you know, different trim levels or particularly standard versus extended range. Have you seen any surprises there? And what's that looking like? Are most people going extended?
Yeah, so for F-150 Lightning, we have a wide band because we have that commercial vehicle, that Pro Series. It's available both for fleet and retail. On the fleet side, obviously that Pro Series is that custom fit for the for that customer. On the retail side, it's going to be predominantly longer range, that targeted 300-mile range. And then at launch, we're seeing that Lariat trim to be that high-volume configuration right now.
Which kind of lines up pretty well with conventional gas F-Series as well. That those mid-trim levels, XLT, Lariat.
Correct,
is kind
yeah.
of the big take rates there. On the commercial side, with the Pro, I think the 200,000 reservations that you've talked about, That's just for consumers, right? That does not include the commercial customers. Is that right?
Correct. We haven't broken it out, though, but it's tens and tens of thousands.
And from the I don't know if you, do, I mean, do you deal with the commercial side, or is that just the Ford Pro team?
Yep.
So on the commercial side, what kind of feedback have you gotten from the customers that, you know, that normally buy pickup trucks about the Lightning Pro?
Yeah, so developing the product, there's two critical things that we need, we wanted, our customers wanted, is one is our base 230 range. We know 95% of our customers on the commercial end drive less than 170 miles. So we knew that 230 mile range was critical for us because, you know, you real world kind of issues as well. And then at the same time is because we're trying to help them transition from gas to EV, we want to make it as simple as possible. So we made a strategic choice to share the cab and share the bed length. So let's say they have a toolbox or a basically aftermarket system because they're going to water their crops. It's a plug and play. So they can have gas F-150s and they'll also have the Lightning side by side utilizing those same aftermarket equipment as well.
And I think, you know, Ford's talked about, with the commercial customers that, you know, a significant portion of those, they're not all, you know, returned to depot every night.
Yep.
You know, a lot of times, you know, they have people that they just take the vehicles home and they charge it home.
Yep.
Do you have any sense of kind of what the split is going to be there between depot based vehicles versus charge at home vehicles?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, we're going to target a wide bandwidth of those type of customers. But what's really cool about our Ford Pro charging solutions is we have those depot charging solutions. But at the same time, we have technology. So all those customers that are going to charge at home is when it's hooked up to the telematics, is they can charge at their house, and that company will pay back that customer automatically. So I don't have specifics on the mix, but we know because it's such going to be dependent on the state, who they are, do they live in an apartment, do they live in a house, you know, we're going to monitor that, but we want to make sure our charging solutions cover all those usages.
And, you know, Ford Pro last year acquired a company called Electrify to integrate what they're doing into the whole telematics platform. How's that working? Is that going to be a part of how you manage or how you help customers manage, you know, how much is being spent on charging, you know, for home charging, as well as things that are going on at the depot, managing, you know, which vehicles are charging when, that sort of thing?
The key advantage for us is in Ford Pro charging is with that acquisition and then with our growing kind of footprint is what we found is all these fleets want to go electric, but hey, they need to talk to this utility, or they need to talk to this state, or I'm not allowed to do this, or they don't know what they need because I need to charge in 6 hours or 16 hours. So the key thing is the Ford Pro charging solutions, it's almost consulting. So we will go in there and basically work through, hey, how many EVs that you want to purchase? What's the usage? How many charges do you need? Do you need two? Do you need 13, depending on what it is? And we work side by side with them. And the key to that purchase with Electrify is the key thing is they have that expertise already, and we're basically building up on that.
Okay. On the commercial side, one of the great features of this truck is that, you know, it has the capability of towing 10,000 pounds.
Yep.
But, you know, there's also a challenge when you're towing, whether you're towing with a gas vehicle or an electric, it uses a lot more energy when you're towing.
Yep.
And so range is going to decline substantially on the EV. What kind of feedback have you heard from customers or potential customers about the needs as far as towing goes? Do you have any sense of what is the typical use case for truck F-150 owners that are towing? You know, are they often towing long distances, or is it more, you know, 100 to 150 mile distances that they tow?
Yeah. So what we say is we can't be pissing. So obviously,
right,
it doesn't matter if it's diesel or gas or EV. The more tow, the more fuel economy or the range will hit. On the Lightning specifically, we do see a lighter usage. So if you're going to tow crazy weight, frequently, long distances, at this point, obviously just the time it takes to charge is not right, but that's the key thing is we have all those different power choice options. So as we make that transition, doesn't matter if you're going to tow 10,000 or 2,000, we have a feature called Intelligent Rain. So our goal is, no matter that degradation, you know, what the temperature is, what's the grade of your route, how you're driving, is we want to tell you that real-world rain before you leave the driveway. So if you're a commercial customer, hey, I have a 130-mile loop, and I'm X charge. Can I make it today? And then for the retail customer, I'm going on a road trip, and I'm towing something. Tell me where I need to stop. Don't get me on the highway, and then the rain dramatically goes down. So that intelligent rain is critical for us. And for lighting specifically, we have a technology called onboard scales, too. So for hauling or even how many people are in the vehicle, it recognizes that and actually impacts that into that real-world range calculation.
Yeah, the onboard scales are interesting technology. I was actually just driving an F-150 last week,
yeah. And
it had the onboard scale option. And, you know, during the time I had it was when we had the big snowstorm in Michigan last week. And so I was trying out the onboard scales, and the bed of the truck was full of snow and ice.
Yeah.
And so I had about 400 pounds of snow and ice in the bed of the truck. So, you know, it's interesting to see that. And I think that's a really neat solution. And you were giving an example last night at dinner about, you know, you've been driving one of these for a while now. And you talked about going to visit a friend and how you made some charging decisions. Can you give us that example?
Yeah, so we have a technology called Power Venture. So that's our mapping tool. And what's really cool about that is it's hooked up. So we have the largest charging network, the Blue Oval Charge Network. So you can say, hey, where I want to go, you know, two stops, three stops, as well as what the state of charge wants to be when you hit that destination. So it can automatically say, hey, we recommend this one and this one. And what I mentioned is most routing is just get me to the destination with range, and that's it. Right? What we give the ability to our customers is to pick those charging stations that within the recommendation that makes sense, as well as I want to get to my destination with 40% state of charge. So it knows not just at my destination, but with 40% because it knows I have to go back. So we really work hard because 80% or over 90% of customers are going to be new to EV that purchased the Lightning. And the first thing that we want to make sure is a great experience is that road trip charging experience. That's that key kind of, should I buy an EV or not? And we want to make that as simplest and seamless as possible.
Yeah, and, you know, charging has been clearly an issue with EVs. You know, that's one of the big concerns that consumers have for not adopting an EV so far is availability of charging and the time it takes to charge. Certainly since the debut of the Mach-E, you know, we've seen a lot of reports from people, you know, going to charging stations and finding them not functional or charging very slowly. And I know Ford's been doing some stuff around that, the Charge Angels program.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how that's going and what kind of progress you're making there?
Yeah, that's critical for us because obviously it's that unknown as well as that pain point of showing up to a charger that shows available or shows a rate and it's not actually hitting that charge rate. So we have Charge Angels that actually are driving around physically. We also are utilizing kind of crowdsourcing from reviews or Ford Pass reviews. And as soon as that we see, hey, this Electrify America charge station is supposed to pump out this charge rate and it's this, we work with those companies immediately. And then we have on-site technicians that go and solve the problem. Because we know is as the EV charge station footprint grows, that's going to be critical. So every single day, we have people at Ford, that's all their job, is to make sure that we optimize that experience. And when something goes wrong, is we have processes in place to contact those companies.
As part of that, you know, are you relying entirely on the customers to report back, you know, what their experience was, or are you also doing some automatic telemetry?
Yeah.
You know, these vehicles are all connected. You know what the rate of charge is and, you know, where it's being charged.
Right, yeah, so it's combination. So we have over-the-air updates, we have telematics, so we know, let's say there's a charging call, or let's say we know your VIN, we know where you've been charging and if there's any issues. So proactively, we have the cloud that can tell us that. At the same time, is we basically use that crowdsourcing as well as saying, hey, it could be as basic as the parking spot isn't big enough for my vehicle. So a lot of that stuff, you still need that crowdsourcing because there's the data that we get the truck, but at the same time, we need that real-world review as well.
One of the unique options that's available with this vehicle, at least unique to the North American market so far, is the intelligent power backup system.
Yeah.
I think that's something that I think potentially a significant number of customers might be interested in. What kind of response are you seeing to that? I guess first, let's talk a little bit about, if you can, about exactly how that system's going to work. What a customer has to buy in order to have that capability.
Yeah. So before I mention that, we have two technologies. We have the ProFarm board, which is outlets in the trucks. Separately, what you mentioned is we have an all new Ford intelligent backup power. So what that means is through our 80 amp wall box, you can actually charge your vehicle and then reverse the DC power to power your home. For the customer who purchased the Lightning, we are partnering with the largest solar panel company and installer in the country, basically Sunrun, and they're going to white glove and walk through all of our customers the different options. So they'll be the primary installer. A customer can choose however they want, but when they purchase it, we're working with Sunrun. So what's going to happen is a customer will order a Lightning. They will then be contacted by Sunrun saying, hey, your Lightning is estimated delivered in a couple months. Do you want to start the setup now? Yes. Sunrun will go on site. So it depends on what the customer needs. If they just want the wall box to plug in, they can do that. If they want the backup power, they can do that. So in that scenario, Sunrun will walk through, hey, here's the wall box. You have your electro outlet. You're going to need an inverter and a transfer switch, and then a dark state basic battery to be able to, if the power goes out, to have them communicate. And it really depends on the house. So we don't have pricing right now, because it could be a modern house, old house, you need to do wiring, from the garage or not. But we'll hold our customers' hands through that process, because we know it's such a cool technology. And all these customers that want to do it, we want to make sure that if they want it, we are helping along the way to make sure that they understand exactly what they need.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the cost of that is going to vary depending on what kind of service the customer has in their house. But just for that, the transfer switch, the inverter, and that backup battery, do you have a sense of, or at least a range of what the cost of that hardware would be, aside from the installation?
Yeah, so we haven't announced pricing on that yet, but we can tell you it's pretty similar to, the home backup generator kind of benchmark today in the industry.
Okay. What about availability? When is that going to be available, from day one when you start shipping?
Yeah, so
Lightnings to customers.
Our goal is the wall box is obviously with the extended range battery variant. It will be delivered before you take delivery, so that allows Sunrun to, if they want it to be installed before taking delivery, they can do that. So yes, it will be available at launch.
Do you have a sense of kind of what percentage of customers have expressed interest in having that option?
So we know the vast majority want to do that technology. We don't have the exact forecast of how many people will end up doing it, because cost, do they actually go through the purchase of the Lightning itself and all that kind of stuff. But as we're going to learn a lot the first year in market, and then we'll basically take those learnings to make sure we optimize the customer experience.
I think one question that received from a podcast listener about this is does this work exclusively with the Sunrun system, or if a customer already has a backup generator and transfer switch, can they integrate this with hardware from other vendors?
So at this time, it really depends on the vendor. But what I can say is we co-develop the Pacific inverter for the Lightning with Sunrun. So we have a proprietary inverter.
Okay.
To your point, we're not saying, hey, you can't use this and that. We're setting up the system to utilize ours because we know it's going to work. It's going to be under warranty, and then we know, basically we can provide support for it. But we're not saying you can't use something. It's so new. We're still learning day after day.
Okay. Would that potentially maybe require a software update to the truck to enable it to work with hardware from other vendors?
Yeah, so I can't answer that. I'm not quite sure on that.
Okay. All right. Let's see. What else? And as far as the availability of the Lightning, that's still targeted for the spring?
Yep, we are on track for launch.
On schedule for that?
Yep.
Okay. Great. Anything else that we haven't talked about that people should be thinking about if they're thinking about an electric truck?
I think the great thing with the Lightning is it does all the truck stuff in tow, haul, it's big cab, it has a mega power frunk. So all the truck customers, it's going to be able to do it and more. And what we found in our reservation data is 76% of all reservation holders are new to Ford. So we really think this is going to attract not just
that's similar to Mach-E, the Mach-E.
Correct,
right?
Yeah. So we really think when we talk to customers, they go, I've never driven a truck. I've never driven an EV, but I've always been on the fence and I want to drive an EV. This is pushing those customers over the edge. So we're really excited to see, one, we're targeting, and from the demand that we're seeing, it's all across the U.S. It's not just coastal, it's not just truck markets, but we're really excited to use this vehicle to people that are never purchasing this brand to basically get them inside this Ford brand.
Yeah, I think you mentioned earlier 90% of reservation holders are new to EVs.
Correct. Yes.
And 76% are new to Ford. Are those customers coming from other trucks or from non-truck vehicles?
Yeah. So what basically the data we have is a little under half have a truck in the household. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean what they drive. So what we predominantly see is it's a wide range. There's trucks, there's SUVs, and then also just, hey, I drive a 94 Ford Focus, and I've been saving up, and this is my first new car purchase, and I want an EV, and I want a truck. So it really is across the bandwidth.
What about the other 24%, that are currently Ford owners? Are they moving from a gas F-150 or Ranger or some other F-Series to the Lightning or from some other vehicle?
Yeah, so majority of them are coming from a pickup.
Okay.
So F-150 or Super Duty or Ranger.
So the pickup owners are the ones, the people that are already pickup owners are the most interested in this. And then, and then potentially a lot of conquest pickup customers. So potentially some growth in market share with the launch of this.
Definitely. I mean, this is the real deal. I mean, we're electronic icon for the future. So this is a niche play. We think over time, year over year, our Lightning volume is going to grow and grow and become a huge, huge volume for us, as well as to capture market share as well.
At least until you have more competition. Then we'll see how those numbers shake out. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a very interesting next 2 to 3 years in the truck market. As you start to get some competition in this really important sector for the U.S. market, at least.
Yeah.
Are there any plans to export the Lightning to other markets? I mean, obviously, aside from North America, there's limited demand for full-size trucks, except in places like Middle East. Are there any plans to export outside of North America?
So right now, what I can tell you is at launch, we're focused on the U.S. and Canada market right now, and so that's where the Lightning will be sold today.
Okay. One more thing. Canada, obviously, a lot of parts of Canada, like Michigan and Wisconsin and Illinois, get some cold weather. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing any difference in interest between the Canadian and U.S. markets?
So what we're seeing in cold weather climates is, one, we're proactively kind of working with the customers. We really think that longer range variant will be more suitable because the cold weather does impact rain. So we're really making sure the retail customers, especially in those cold weather states, understand the difference between a standard rain versus a extended rain, especially in those real world basically weather environments.
And the Pro is available with the extended range battery, correct?
For fleet customers.
Yeah,
yes.
For fleet customers.
Yep.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you so much, Jason.
Thank
great
you
to
much.
Talk to you.
Thanks.
And for our final segment, I had an interview with Eric Gronfeld, who is the chief engineer for the Ford Bronco Raptor.
All right, I'm here with Ari Gronfeld, the chief engineer on the Ford Bronco Raptor. And so, Ari, what was the goal in developing this vehicle?
Yeah, so actually, from a goal perspective, it was to achieve the Raptor DNA. And what we found is, as you look at the base program's capability, the base Bronco, we found that the rock crawling capability of that truck, and then adding the Raptor DNA, meaning high-speed desert running, we were able to accomplish both and take this into a different space, like the Ultra 4 that we were talking about just a few moments ago. So F-150 Raptor really was inspired by trophy trucks. This is a good balance between obviously the high-speed desert, which it totally achieves, and extreme rock crawling. So we've lifted up everything on this truck, and that was our goal.
And let's go through some of the changes from, you know, a top end of the current top end of the Bronco lineup.
Yeah.
I guess probably a Wild Track.
Well, Badlands.
Or Badlands with a Sasquatch. What gets you from that to a Raptor?
So there's quite a few changes that you heard me talk about today. So we start off with the frame, and we had to make reinforcements and make a stronger frame for desert durability type loads. We changed the shock towers in the front and rear of the vehicle to accommodate increased wheel travel. So wheel travel and suspension is really key to a Raptor's performance. So we made those changes. So we have different shocks. We have the Fox Live Valve technology. Those are 3.1-inch shocks, front and rear, coupled with unique control arms to get the travel. We get 14 inches of travel in the rear, 13 in the front. That's, compared to the front of base program, that's 60% more. It's 40% more in the rear. So you have the Fox Shock technology with internal bypass in their coilover shocks.
And those have remote reservoirs, right?
We have remote reservoirs in the back, piggyback reservoirs, and then in the front, it's integrated. That capability is integrated within the front shocks.
Right. So that allows you to do more heat dissipation.
Yeah,
so
we got
to stand up on
these shocks are very capable. And obviously, we test them. We test them in the desert. We test them through grueling conditions and terrains.
And the architecture of the suspension is similar to what other Broncos have, but there's almost no common parts, are there?
So the control arms are different, the shocks are different, some of the bushings are different. So and then again, the shock towers are different as well. So there's a lot of change to the suspension compared to say a Badlands on a base program, and the capability is accentuated with the Bronco Raptor. The speeds that you can go and the terrain that you can go over is really impressive.
So, you know, let's say, you know, running across the desert, if somebody wanted to do, you know, something like a Baja, could the Bronco keep up with an F-150 Raptor?
Oh, great question. So when we do our testing, we find that the F-150 Raptor and the Bronco Raptor, they keep pace with each other. So it's very comparable.
But then when you get into, you know, get into canyons and rock crawling, it sounds like the Bronco would actually be able to leave the Raptor or the F-150 in the dust.
Well, I wouldn't say in the dust, but I will say that we've, with that Ultra 4 Inspiration, some of the content that we have on the Bronco Raptor is specialized for that rock crawling if the customer is going to go rock crawling. So whether it's the heavy-duty skid plates, which we have on the Bronco Raptor, on the F-150 Raptor, but also like the rock rails that we have on it. We also have a standard disconnectable front stay bar, so you won't find that on an F-150. Those are things that help give you the capability in the rocks.
And of course, you still have all the other types of features that you'll find in other Broncos, like the trail turn assist.
Yes, that's there.
And the one pedal driving and things like that, the trail control.
Yeah, and so we've added to that as well, though. So we've added the Baja mode for desert running and giving you the maximum performance in the desert. And we've also increased our trailer tow capability to 4,500 pounds, 1,000 pounds more than the base Bronco, and added a tow haul mode as well.
So the Baja mode, what does that change? What sorts of changes do you get when you engage that?
So we have the 3-liter twin turbo EcoBoost, right? It's a proven engine. What you get with the Baja mode is, opposed to if the customer decides to take their foot off the throttle as they're going through a certain terrain, what Baja mode is going to do is going to utilize this anti-lag technology, something that was previously reserved for like race cars, etc. And as opposed to dumping the turbo boost right out wastegates, we're going to crack the throttle slightly so you keep those turbos spinning and you keep the pressure there.
Okay. So it's going to be responsive as soon as you get into it. It's just going to keep right on going.
Exactly.
All right. Sounds like that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, this thing is quite a bit wider than other Broncos as well.
Yeah. So the width of this truck is pretty much the same as an F-150 Raptor. And you want that width for that stability when you're going in the desert, you're going over surfaces at high speed. So the axles are upgraded and the track width is increased. 8.2 inches in the front, 8.6 inches in the rear, wider than the base program.
Okay. But it's still got a really low crawl ratio.
Yeah, it hasn't sacrificed on the ability to crawl rocks.
Okay.
Yeah.
And only offering this with the 10-speed automatic, right? No,
that's correct.
No manual transmission option with the 3-liter?
No, we're not offering a manual transmission.
So I got to ask, you know, is this the ultimate version of the street-legal Bronco that we're going to see in the foreseeable future, or
well,
it's got more stuff up your sleeves?
Well, Ford Performance is always looking at different options, but right now we're really excited about this product. It's really the top of the Bronco line and is delivering on the Raptor DNA that people are expecting.
Why no two-door version?
Well, we think the four-door with the wheelbase, as you're going through rugged terrain and
extra stability?
Yeah, extra stability with the four-door. So it's four-door only.
Okay. How's the ride quality compare, you know, when you're driving it on the street, which is, you know,
yeah,
to be honest, what most people are going to be doing most of the time with this thing. You know, how is it to drive as a daily driver?
Oh, it's great. I can tell you it's great. I've driven the truck many times. I've driven it on-road. I've driven it off-road, at high speed, low speed, in both conditions, and it really is a pleasure to drive. And if you get a chance to drive one with our drive events, I'd really like for you to sit in the seat and drive it.
Yeah, hopefully I will. I've actually got a Bronco Wild Track that I'm driving right now. It was just delivered on Tuesday.
Okay.
And looking forward to spending some time with it.
Oh, yeah.
Playing with it this weekend.
Yeah,
so
awesome.
Really looking forward to trying this one out sometime later this summer.
Yeah, I think you'll be impressed.
And when's this going to be available?
This summer.
Okay.
So this summer it's going to be available.
And what about, that's not announced pricing yet?
We have actually.
Oh,
so base pricing is starting at around $69,995, including destination and delivery.
Okay, great.
So that would be with a marine grade vinyl interior. But it has all the functional bits of the leather interior, right?
Uh-huh.
So all the function is there at the base price.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much.
All right, thank you. All right, take care. Thanks.